Coming up on Weekend America.
When it comes to the war for the presidency, Iowans sure know how to put up a fight.
Well, actually, we had hot cider, coffee, and cookies in the kitchen.
Now that the battle is over, we'll go back to Iowa and hear what it was like in the trenches. I'm Desiree Cooper.
And I'm Bill Radke. This hour, refugees in America call the most unlikely places home.
Sudanese, they like being together. Omaha has the largest population of the Sudanese in the United States.
What one man brought with him from the heart of Africa to the American heartland. And this weekend in Chicago, word hounds and lexicographers have just announced their words of the year. So what makes a good word anyway?
Sniff, snuffle, snout, snorkel, snotty, snooty, snobby, snippy.
Well, we'll snoop around and let you know. Coming up on Week in America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. And welcome to new listeners in Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, and Utah. Simultaneously, KSUT joins us today, Four Corners Radio, and home of the Southern Ute Indian Tribe.
Thanks for casting your vote for us, you guys. Folks in New Hampshire are about to cast a different kind of vote. They're preparing for next week's primaries. So here's the question. Who would you vote for if you could choose anyone for president?
I've been doing those online things that match you up with the best, you know, candidate, and it's always between Hillary and Obama.
Right now I'm leaning towards Mike Huckabee.
Right now I would probably vote for Jimmy Carter.
It would be either Eleanor Roosevelt or Hillary Clinton.
George Clooney, why not?
I think he has a good personality. He leads well.
I like Mitt, and I like Rudy, and I like John.
John Lennon. Because that's not even possible because he's from England. I don't know. Give peace a chance, all that.
Well, actually, being from England wouldn't be the biggest impediment for John Lennon.
No, I think that's true. All of those voices, by the way, came to us from the great states of Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, it's only the first week of 2008, but for most of us, the 2008 elections are already old hat. And that certainly holds true for many Iowans, where there's been nonstop campaigning for months. Well, the Iowa caucuses are over and the candidates are now overrunning New Hampshire. But before we move on, we wanted to check back with ordinary Iowans about how they weathered the caucuses on Thursday. People like Jim and Gracia Willis, they're in Rockwell City, Iowa, and we first met them in December. They were then preparing for the Democratic caucus that was going to be held in their home. Well, Thursday night, 35 neighbors showed up. Everyone present had to eventually agree on one of three candidates, so the voters divided themselves into corners of the room based on who they were supporting. And then the scrabble for consensus was on. Well, I checked in with the Willises the morning after. I wanted to hear about the tense, nail-biting caucus night drama.
It's sort of a placid group. The people who were here had mostly made up their minds. There were four preference groups, and they were Obama, Clinton, Edwards, Richardson, and then one undecided person.
How did the undecided person decide which group to join? Did you guys talk with them? Were they courted by the Clinton people and the Obama people in your living room to join them?
Not
did you offer them brownies? What happened?
I was the Obama precinct captain, and I talked to them and indicated that we would be happy to have them join the Obama group, and they had heard the letters from each of the candidates that Gracia had read earlier, as she was the precinct chair.
I think one of these persons said, well, I will not join such and such's group.
Which group did that person not want to join?
Oh, I'd rather not say.
I'll say. She didn't want to join the Clinton group.
I'm just wondering, by having a caucus in your home and, you know, your precinct captains and you're active in particular campaigns, both of you were Obama supporters going into the caucuses, correct?
Yes, but I don't think we were threatening at all because we had several people call and say they were coming and we knew they were supporting other people and everybody was just fine with that. We didn't realize that having a caucus in the home was so unusual.
Tell me about what time did they arrive and what was the process like?
Well, the first woman arrived at a quarter to six with her hair in curlers, and after she made herself comfortable, had to go into the bathroom and comb out her hair. And then people started arriving a little after six.
And she had her hair in curlers because she wanted to look her best as the caucus.
I think so.
That's right.
What time did people leave?
Oh, my. 8:30?
Yeah, anywhere from 8:30 to after 9.
I'm a little surprised that people wouldn't hang around to see what happened and to hear the speeches at the end of the night.
Well, this was a group of mostly old and young, and they wanted to go home and watch on their own TVs, I think.
We were pleased that, you know, in addition to the older people that traditionally attend the caucus, there were two high school students and a college student. And then there was a mid-20s family, one of whom became a delegate to go to the county convention and quite interested in wanting to go the next step, you know, this probably the first caucus that they've participated in.
When I think of this process, and especially I think in Iowa, where the story in my mind are people who are pleasant neighbors, you know, who are very polite and would welcome someone into their home. I'm thinking kind of party atmosphere, but you're describing a sort of all business atmosphere.
Well, actually, we had hot cider, coffee, and cookies in the kitchen.
Were they homemade cookies?
Yes.
Well, then I think I'm right about Iowa.
Yes, you are. But it was... Some previous caucuses have been more active, or, you know, people have wanted to argue and debate. I thought there wasn't a lot of conversation going on beforehand, but afterwards, you know, people were visiting like neighbors, and it was not exactly party-like, but at least some people stuck around to visit and catch up on their neighbors.
Now, are you guys going to be watching the debate on Saturday?
I don't know. It's, you know, it's kind of a toss-up because it's likely that we've heard everything that will be said other than the celebratory remarks of Mike Huckabee and Barack Obama.
Well, Jim and Gracia, thank you for spending this time with us today.
It was fun.
Our pleasure.
You can see some great pictures of the caucus at Jim and Gracia's house and read a special dispatch from our own Kyle Gassett. It's all on our website, weekendamerica.org.
One of the remarkable things about these Iowa caucuses was the turnout. For both parties, but especially the Democrats, turnout was almost twice as high as 4 years ago. People are clearly fired up.
Yeah, we've been asking you about how you've been getting involved with elections this year. Elizabeth Blaine lives in San Diego, California, and she said she used to be the most apolitical person around.
I barely voted at all. I almost never voted in the primaries, but on election day, I would usually just ask somebody, okay, I'm supposed to vote today. Who do I vote for?
Yeah, but this year, inspiration has stricken her from above.
About a couple months ago, a friend of mine who lives in Minneapolis told me about Ron Paul. So I went to his website and just started reading about him and watching YouTube videos about the Ron Paul blimp, which is a 200-foot flying blimp that says, "Who is Ron Paul? Google Ron Paul" on the side of it. I saw a video of this blimp taking off in North Carolina, and I felt this huge surge of pride and energy. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I think that we should have one of those in San Diego, a miniature version. And I got in contact with the blimp company in Arizona, and we had it within like 4 days. Right now, it is floating right next to the Interstate 5 near the San Diego airport, where it's seen by tens of thousands of people every day.
I'm Barbara Petroselli, and I'm from Douglas, Massachusetts. Before this election season, I had registered for voting, and I had voted. And then last time, I put a carry sticker on my car, but that is the full extent of anything I'd done in politics before now. When I went to Barack Obama's website and read about him and his whole approach, it just really, really motivated me to get involved. So I've done a lot more than I ever did in the past. I started by giving money to the Obama campaign. Then I bought tickets to go to a rally in Boston. I went to New Hampshire and did door-to-door canvassing on a Saturday a few weeks ago. Then I went back to New Hampshire and canvassed again for a day, and this time I brought my 10-year-old daughter with me. This was last weekend, and that was great. She enjoyed it. She learned so much. And then I'm going again this Saturday. I'm bringing a group of four people in a carpool up, and we're going to do door-to-door canvassing in Manchester, New Hampshire.
My name is Eric Olson, and I live in Hermantown, Minnesota. Before this election season, I was a participant just in that I was a consumer. I listened, I read a lot, I voted. What struck me was just the difference between all the other candidates and Senator Obama. I stood up and paid attention to that. In my town, I did organize a fundraiser for him. It was only marginally successful. I think we had about 20 people who came, which I thought was great. It's not a big deal, but you know, it helped helped me feel better about being involved.
Thanks for that story. Of course, people get involved in politics for all sorts of reasons.
Well, I decided to get involved this time around because I met this really great girl that I thought was really cool, and she was into politics, and so I thought I'd impress her by registering to vote.
Yeah, it's one man, one vote because of one woman. That's listener Mark Masson from San Diego, California.
I usually don't take elections seriously because I can see the bigger picture and know that nothing's going to last forever, so I just kind of concentrate on what's going on in my little world, I guess. Even though I have been more politically active, it ultimately didn't work. I think she kind of saw through to my ulterior motives.
Well, so Mark is still looking for someone to share his political awakening with. You can check out his photo and photos of all the listeners when you just go to our website, weekendamerica.org.
So what about you? What is pulling you into this election? A friend, a personal connection, a vision? And what has happened now that you have become involved?
Whether you're a veteran volunteer or a newbie, share your story with us. Go to weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week.
One man flees the war in Sudan, but realizes there are things you should never leave behind. Coming up on Weekend America. From American Public Media, I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. We've been talking to refugees in America, asking what was the one thing they brought with them to remind them of home.
I'm from Burma.
I came from Iraq.
I'm from Somalia.
I'm from Somalia, too.
I go to America.
We have carried with us
videotapes.
My dad's picture.
Some very old Sunday school books.
Without your past, you're nothing.
Omaha, Nebraska is home to the largest Sudanese community in the United States, including Malakal Gwak. He was working with an international relief organization when officials accused him of supporting rebels in Sudan. They threw him in jail. He escaped to Kenya, continued his relief efforts, and while he was speaking at a conference in Omaha, he decided to apply for political asylum. So now he's a caseworker for Sudanese refugees in Omaha, and he's waiting for his family to get clearance to join him here. And what's the one thing that Malakal brought with him? A love song his father composed.
My father used to be a very nice singer. Like, he composed songs and he sing them. When I happened to be singing one of his songs, I always remember him and remember home. You know, he was just talking about romance, about how he got my mom and him and his friends, how they dress and the style of walking. And of course, the life he is talking about in his songs is a life I never witnessed. I left Sudan twice. The first time, I just left Sudan to go for studies, and when I finished my undergraduate, then I went back to Sudan. Sudan has been having a civil war for many years. If you want to be active and help your people, then you are subject to persecution. I went and worked with the International Relief Organization. I was arrested in Khartoum, in northern Sudan, and they put me in a jail with war prisoners in a town in southern Sudan called Juba. The security personnel would come each day and kill one person. And then you will be asked to clean the blood and the piece of the body that actually fall down. You know, sometimes it just a decision that one has to make when you see there's no other options. And actually, I escaped jail. That part of town is very bushy. It has a lot of forest. I just told them I want to go to a toilet. We were two of us. A senior officer pointed at a soldier and said, take them just a little bit to the bush here. This soldier stood less than 3 meters. And before anything happened, nobody tell one another, let's run or something. We just ran. But he was yelling at us, stop, stop. They released a lot of bullets and everybody was like running after us. So all of a sudden it was very unfortunate because there's some landmines. I just heard a noise and I'd assume that was my friend because I didn't see him again. So I had to keep walking. I know I'm going toward either Kenya or Uganda. That's all I was assuming. It took me about 4 days. That's how I end up in Kenya. When I reached Kenya, I get involved in working with human rights activities. For that, we go to southern Sudan and we deliver food to the displaced persons in southern Sudan. My coming to U.S., it was for a conference, and I was one of the speakers to come and update them about the situation back home. I came to Omaha on June 25th, 2003. I decided to apply for political asylum as soon as I came here. My wife and my children are in Nairobi, Kenya. When I decide to apply for political asylum, they can't come here until my process are complete. I actually sing my father's song to my wife when I was in Kenya. This song is a very famous song, especially during the weddings. When girls used to sing it, they clap their hands. And then it goes like that, and the other woman goes to the other person like that in a circle. I brought my father's songs from Sudan with me. Sudanese, they like being together. Omaha has the largest population of the Sudanese in the United States. People meet at the Sudanese Center.
My name is Kawunda.
Kawunda is the person in charge of the center.
You can see the sign here, Sudanese Center of Omaha, that where we meet always.
I come here and play some cards.
Let us open the door, let us see. You will get a lot of people that coming in here, more than, 50, 60, 70 Sudanese that always come to this place, Sudanese Center.
When we are there, we actually address a lot of issues.
They are talking about children. Most of the children here, they are really getting out of control. Every Friday or every Saturday, Sunday, you hear a lot of shooting. It's really scaring people. Some of them even drop out from the schools.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. After I arrived in the United States, I worked with the refugees, and I personally formed the Council of Elders.
What kind of training are you going to give to the elders? Because what they receive from you is what they will be helping the community with.
That brings all the tribes of the Sudanese here to discuss issues of domestic violence.
Learning and understanding the laws here and how to live under those laws.
It is the responsibility of elders to go back into our community and educate our youth with the culture and the better way of living here, especially the younger ones. There are many youth that when you find them, they ask you a lot of questions. Because though they are Sudanese, most of them were born in the refugee camps in different countries. I actually believe the song teaches a lot because it shows to the people that are young here the tradition way of Sudan. You know, sometimes someone else would just sing it and say, hey, this song is your father's song. And I would start singing it again, It makes me proud of him. And at the same time, it just helps us to remember him.
Malakal's father died in 1999. And sadly, the Sudanese community in Omaha is attending a funeral for a young boy this weekend. He was killed in a car accident. Our story in this entire series was produced by Ann Hepperman and Kara Oler, and you can hear pieces in the series that we aired previously. They come from towns and cities all over the United States. Travel to our website at weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Executive MPA Program.
On long winter nights, you just can't put a price tag on that warm, snuggly feeling. Unless you're willing to spend $800 at an outdoor clothing store. Coming up on Weekend America.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. Well, it's time for your letters. On our New Year's show last week, we visited Chris and his sister Amanda, two longtime foster care children. They were adopted by a family finally last year. And I spoke with them about adjusting to life with their new family. Sharon Stern hears us on KOPB in Portland, Oregon, and she phoned in with this message for them.
As a stepmother of an adoptee, I now better understand the power of love. I was so touched by Chris and Amanda's comments today. I understand that life has knocked them around, yet their sense of self and each other, their resilience and strength, are obvious. I want to thank them for their honest comments, and I want them to know that I will never forget them.
Thank you, Sharon. 2 weeks ago, we looked at how Iraq war vets are making the transition back to civilian life. One of the soldiers we profiled said that since the American people sent him to war, we all have a responsibility to help him heal. That prompted a message from Mark Neymark, who listens to us in Paris, France, via podcast.
Jason wasn't forced to go to war. He was a volunteer who accepted a job as a soldier. I regret that he has suffered from doing his job and agree that the American people should do as much as they can to help him. But they did not send him to war. His boss sent him to war.
On a recent holiday show, we focused on people coming and going home for the holidays. Beth Hertzhoff in Los Angeles says she's had about enough.
I often listen to Weekend America, and I enjoy it. But I have to say that it's completely frustrating. Seemingly all of your home-type stories are always about the smell of home or the taste of home or the cloying warmth of home. And there are many people who didn't have a great home life but are happy now.
Well, if you've got a comment or something to get off your chest, send us your letters. You can email them to letters@weekendamerica.org or just go to our website.
So, Des, today marks our first weekend on WBEZ in Chicago. And since we do love to hear from listeners, I wanted to know what it takes to get a Chicagoan to write to us or call us. Chicago Tribune columnist Rick Kogan told me, oh, it's easy. Just say the Cubs will lose again this year.
Again, for the 100th year in a row, you'll have Cub fans delineating every wonderful new thing that's happening in the offseason that is going to break that curse of the billy goat. Yes, do that.
So they're not head-hanging pessimists about the Cubs.
Oh, my God, no. I mean, the whole notion, this whole curse of the billy goat thing, it's a great excuse for ineptitude. And I think this whole notion of the lovable losers goes to this whole, I think, inherent insecurity that the city of Chicago has, the proverbial second city.
So this is what I want to know. Do Chicagoans want us to depict that insecurity, or are they insecure about being insecure?
It's a weird thing, Bill. I think they like to play up this kind of insecurity and pretend that Chicago is not as great a theater town as it actually is to keep strangers from coming here. It's a weird balance that we do here, this sort of insecurity and pride. But many people who visit here and think that they're going to, you know, run into the stockyards and mobsters shooting each other on the street.
I assume I'm going to get shot by cows, but you're telling me that's actually a myth.
3 years ago in this town, there was cows on parade. There were these, like, huge cows, plastic, mind you, Bill, plastic, on every corner. And one of the great hobbies at 4 a.m. in the morning when people would pour from Chicago saloons was when cops weren't watching to knock the cows down. So a cow could fall on you.
I see.
A cow could fall on you in Chicago.
Okay, good to know. You know, it's painful for us to make a gaffe. Tell me in advance what's going to get someone from Chicago to say, you moron, you've obviously never been to Chicago because you said X.
You were talking about Chicago architecture, mm-hmm. and you referred to Soldier Field as Soldier's Field, which happens all the time. People would destroy you.
Okay.
You'll get every phone in your studio will light up.
Soldier Field. I can't repeat that enough. Chicago, welcome to you and your one soldier. Rick, we're glad to be in Chicago. Thank you for talking with us.
Glad those knuckleheads at BEZ got their act together.
Okay. Take care. I guess we all have those, don't we? From Seattle, and don't say Nordstrom's,
right,
et cetera, et cetera. Well, we hope to hear from you, Chicago. The easiest way to do that is go to weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul, Minnesota, where today it's a balmy 39 degrees. But often in January, it can be so cold it hurts. And that's why people stick to the skyways, which is this network of enclosed bridges that connect the buildings downtown.
The habit trail.
Exactly. And if you don't want to feel like a hamster in a cage, sometimes you've just got to go outside, even if it is 10 below. Well, Weekend America's John Moe lives in the chilly, wet Northwest, and he's decided he's going to take on winter, but not before getting expert advice on staying warm, no matter how low that mercury drops.
I don't need to play beach volleyball. I just want to get out of the house, take a walk, and not, you know, die of hypothermia. What would it take to take a walk anywhere in America any day of the year? Easiest place to start, I figured, was to go downtown to the flagship store for REI, the outdoor apparel and equipment retailer. Gabe Maricich is a salesman there. Dress in layers, he said. Okay, but how many and what kind?
Kind of a three-layer kind of trifecta is kind of the way I kind of describe it. So you've got something against your skin. It's going to pull the moisture off, keep your body dry. Insulating layer in between, and then a shell of some kind, something water-resistant, waterproof, and wind-resistant or windproof.
I asked Gabe to select the warmest stuff they had. What would be the price of maximum warmth and the closest thing to a guarantee of a pleasant stroll anywhere in the nation, even Alaska?
All right, so it looks like we've got basically everything going on here.
Okay,
so we've got our shell on the outside for our pants.
I've got our shell pants.
So we've got an insulating pants. It's a fleece pant here. And then we've got our long underwear that we wear right against our skin.
Only one layer of socks.
Only one layer of socks, but I think with the insulated boot, which we've got right
here. He's going to be at the register there for a while. The socks alone are $13. We'll get back to him. But that's just what to wear. For tips on what to do in hardcore cold, I stopped by Matt Schoenwald's house.
I have a map, compass, I have an altimeter.
Matt's the program director and senior guide for Mountain Madness, a company that runs expeditions to places far-flung, daunting, and really cold.
A radio or a cell phone would do, depending on where you're going. I have a headlamp, because you don't have a lot of daylight in winter, and it's surprising how fast it goes. I have some sort of knife.
Matt knows about cold. A couple years ago, he was snowed in for 5 days while leading a group up Vincent Massif, the highest point in Antarctica.
To put it in perspective in terms of the temperature range we encountered, the teams that were at Camp 1 said that even with the wind, they were thinking it was like minus 40, and we were 2,500 feet higher. And one of the things that did happen, besides our pee freezing, was the rubber seals in our stove shrank. So fuel would shoot out on and off valves. And so we can only guess that it was at least minus 50 and potentially colder.
What do you mean your pee freezes? And what do you do about that?
As it exits, it's still liquid. But by the time it hits the ground, it's a solid. You took your time and made sure your back was to the wind.
Okay, now it doesn't feel so cold where you are, right? So that's one way to stay warm. Just compare your neighborhood to Antarctica. Matt says another way is to conserve the heat you generate and maintain the fuel to make more.
And also just right at the base of your head and your neck, you lose a lot of heat. So those are places that you want to protect from heat loss. And one of the ways that I manage that is I'll often make sure I get everything tucked in really well and pull my pants up high. So it just that way my back is protected by my pants and my jacket. And I don't expose my lower back to the elements. Because that's one way. Once you get a chill up and down your spine, it takes a lot more energy to reheat yourself than to stay warm. And just any flesh that's exposed. Like I had my face mask tucked under my goggles, and there was one sliver, an inch long and a millimeter wide. A couple of weeks later, when I finally looked in the mirror, a little piece of skin peeled off like a sunburn.
And remember that chicken soup Mom gave you? She was onto something.
Some people bring tea and coffee. I do that, but I also tend to bring broth because when you work, you expel salt. And a lot of times just the electrolyte balance helps. Like a warm cup of miso or a chicken broth, just a little cup of that will do a lot for you.
Use layers and pull your pants up. Drink something warm, especially something like soup, and be grateful that you're not in Antarctica, is what I'm hearing.
I would say so.
Well, I think I have some broth at home, and I can remember to keep moving and cover my lower back and face. Back at REI, Gabe's almost done totaling up our cart. 3 layers of coats and pants, mittens that resemble oven mitts, boots, socks, a hat that looks perfect for robbing Arctic banks, and the total is...
So for $797, I can be incredibly warm at all times.
You can be warm and dry anywhere. And what is the price for true warmth? Being dry and happy.
It's $797.
Okay, so there is a price.
In Seattle, rainy and 41 degrees, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
You can check out Matt's pictures of Antarctica from the warmth of your own home. Plus, get critical info on avoiding avalanches. Remember, you can always surf, no matter the weather. Just do it at our website, weekendamerica.org.
You're listening to Weekend America. My wife got me a book for Christmas called How to Grill, and I read it in bed. Sadly, though, we're having extreme wintry weather in Southern California, which means rain, which means no practicing today. We asked you a couple of weeks ago how you spend your weekends in the winter. What's your favorite way to pass a cold Saturday or Sunday? The person you're about to meet listens to us in Idaho on Boise State Radio, KBSU, and her ideal winter weekend involves skiing and singing, and hammer time.
My name's Jackie Miser, and I live in Haley, Idaho. I'm married to my husband, Jim, and we have 2 kids. One is Marlo, she's now 12, and Mac, who is now 8. And this is a story about how my family spends time on winter weekends. Marlo is a ski racer, an alpine ski racer. And so at the age of 9, we started traveling to different races. As a result, all of us ski on these weekends. My son Max started to learn to ski very early. There were times where he would stop and he'd look down and say, "I'm not doing this." And in order to help Max build more confidence as we went on these different runs, we started to sing this song. And what we'd do is we'd be up on top of the hill, and we'd be exiting the ski lift and adjusting our boots, making sure our, you know, poles were secure. And somebody would start saying, da-da-da-da, da-da, da-da.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
Da-da-da-da, da-da, da-da.
You can't touch this.
And the next thing you know, Max's starting to say, do-do-do-do, do-do, do-do, can't touch this, do-do-do-do. Can't touch it. Oh! It was just pretty much a confidence builder. I'd look at him and say, "Can't touch this." And somebody else would say, "Da, da, da, da." And he would kind of pick himself up and look down the hill and he'd say, "I can do this." The little guy is a great skier now. He can go down anything.
Yeah, I'm awesome. I can ski almost anything. Usually, like, when I go off a jump and, like, I landed and I'm not hurt, not bleeding, and not on the ground, usually I go, yeah, do-do-do-do, do-do, get the shoes.
Because we're skiing with these other families, too, they would also have small kids in tow, and we got some of them singing it. We've ended up passing people on the runs where they start singing it.
It's just really funny. It gives me a good laugh.
And now he's a snowboarder.
I fall down a lot. It looks like this kind of like, this like ocean of white.
And he's got much more attitude, and he's still singing Hammer Time. We still do it. Da-da-da-da.
Do-do, do-do, can't touch this. Do-do-do, do-do, can't touch this. Oh!
That's word because you know you can't touch this. Can't touch this. Break it down.
snowboarding in those hammer pants must be challenging, by the way. Or very roomy. Jackie Miser listens to Weekend America, possibly on her way up the mountain on KBSU, Boise State Radio.
You know, that was a great story. I had never been skiing until I met my husband in law school, and he took me to the slopes. It was a disaster. I ended up hugging a tree near the bunny hill while he went the black diamond runs. Yeah. And since then, we've had a little understanding about winter sports. So suffice it to say that my slopes theme song would be Meat Loaf's I Would Do Anything for Love, but I won't do that.
Very nice. We've been exploring the seasons this way since last summer, asking you for your perfect weekends and for your memories.
Yeah, so tell us, what are your special only in the winter memories? And how does winter affect you? Do you hibernate or create? What winter traditions have you created with your families?
Whether winter has you outside interpreting the MC Hammer songbook or staying indoors, exposing yourself to all the germs of human interaction, or just retreating to a cave and accomplishing your masterpiece. Tell us about it at weekendamerica.org.
As long as the wheels are turning, as long as the fires are burning, as long as your thrills are coming true, you better believe it, that I would do anything for love. And you know it's true, and that's a fact.
In the Washington Cascades, there might even be too much snow for the real snow lovers. 12 feet of powder this weekend. For more weather, here's Weekend America's John Moe.
Lafayette, Indiana is home to Wolf Park, which, in a bit of thematically appropriate scheduling, hosts Wolf Park Howl Night amid showers, 39 degrees. Guess you wouldn't want to have held it at Sheep Park. That could have been awful. There's a lecture, a visit with wolves, lessons on howling, and wolves rolling their eyes and making fun of you behind your back when you try to howl. The major Christian holiday just wrapped up, but there's a Norse god celebration just getting started in Breckenridge, Colorado. Ullerfest honors Uller, the god of snow, with parade, skiing, and ski burning. The sky honors Uller as well, with snow showers and 35. I imagine it's quieter and less violent than if they had had Thorfest. Gets cold in Anchorage this time of year, 15 degrees with snow today, but your body still needs exercise. Thus, the Frosty Bottom 50-25, a 50 or 25-mile race with no support allowed nor aid provided. You can run, ski, or bike. My preferred method, drive in a heated car. Or, better yet, mentally run the course while sitting at home by the fire, sipping tea. For information on these and other events, go to weekendamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm John Moe for Weekend America.
Will Googleganger and Locavore go the way of Plutoed? Those and other fresh words gone stale coming up on Weekend America.
Weekend America is supported by LendingTree, helping customers find the fixed-rate loan that's right for them. You can choose from up to four offers today, 1-800-555-TREE or at LendingTree.com. When banks compete, you win.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. Scores of the bookish droves have descended on Chicago this weekend. They're coming for the yearly joint meeting of the American Dialect Society and the Linguistic Society of America. And we know you're kicking yourself for not being there right now. Mm-hmm. The centerpiece of the conference actually garners a lot of national attention. They select the word of the year, and they've been making that selection for the past 18 years. Now, the winners were chosen yesterday. There was a fierce battle between Facebook, the word green, as in green energy, and Google Ganger. That's a person with your name who shows up when you Google yourself. But in the end, the winner was clear.
Ladies, gentlemen, colleagues, friends, citizens of the world, it is my privilege to announce that the word of the year chosen by the American Dialect Society in the final, definitive, conclusive choice of word of the year is subprime.
And it's
true. We predicted that, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, the word subprime is everywhere now. But Weekend America's Chrissy Clark wondered, will we even recognize that in a few years?
Grant Barrett is a lexicographer, meaning he edits dictionaries, and he's the vice president of the American Dialect Society. When you get him talking about the word of the year vote, there is one thing he's quick to point out.
I always like to stress that it's not serious. It's not a bunch of pointy-headed intellectuals.
Though he does admit there are a lot of corduroy jackets and elbow pads.
And then we have a handful of bow tie wearers.
But I'll let him finish.
It's not a bunch of pointy-headed intellectuals getting together to officially pronounce the new words in English. We're not a big, august body entering words into the English language lexicon officially, because such a thing doesn't exist.
Grant and his bow-tie-wearing colleagues say that when they get together in Chicago to sift through the memorable words of any given year, they are not in the business of prediction. It would be a fool's game, Grant says, to guess which words will have a future, which words will stick. Still, they've had their fair share of successes.
I think we did very well in previous years. For example, in 2005, we picked the word Sudoku. Podcast was another one.
They scored another win when they voted blog as 2002's word most likely to succeed. .com was 1999's. But how good is this group of non-pointy-headed intellectuals? I went to a bar recently with some friends to find out.
Did anybody Gingrich you over the weekend or anything?
I may have seen a lizard.
Gingrich, the most useful word of 1994. Its definition, to deal with government agencies, policies, and people in the manner of U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Didn't seem to catch on.
When you were on your various travels, did you have Infobon access?
Infobon? Is that like the Autobahn, but for information?
Exactly.
Oh, the information superhighway.
Believe it or not, the word Infobon was 1994's most promising word. Information superhighway was, incidentally, the word of the year in 1993.
Have you guys been listening to the bush lips that have been going on in the run-up to the Iowa caucus? There's been a lot of bush lips. Haven't you noticed there's been a lot of bush lips? No. I'm from Iowa, though.
Bush lips is the most notorious failure of the American Dialect Society.
Here's Grant Barrett again.
It was a passing word used once or twice, perhaps, in reference to the senior George Bush's phrase, read my lips, no new taxes.
Read my lips, no new taxes.
It probably didn't last 10 minutes after they voted on it.
So what words do last?
A lot of it, to be honest, is unpredictable.
According to Harvard psychologist Steven Pinker, words that last must fill a specific need. Or, on the other hand, he says, they could just start with the letters S-N.
Sniff, snuffle, snout, snorkel.
Have you ever realized how many of them have something to do with your nose?
And perhaps by extension, they also pertain to looking down your nose at someone, like snotty, snooty, snobby, snippy. No one really knows where this originated. It might be that you could almost feel your nose wrinkle when you say snuh.
Snuh. Another strategy for lexicographical longevity, make your word a bad word. Pinker says the more taboo the subject, the more new words it spawns. By one count, there are 1,200 words for female genitalia, one of the latest being vajayjay.
All new.
Which brings us to another way to make your word a lasting one.
What's your body?
Get Oprah Winfrey to say it. Grant Barrett, the American Dialect Society VP, calls this the Oprah effect. He says this year alone, Winfrey has taken at least two words from obscurity to celebrity, vajayjay and nose bidet.
she was single-handedly responsible for making millions of people worldwide, or nationwide at least, aware of the term nose bidet.
But if Oprah Winfrey can change language in a single episode, does that mean language is becoming less populist? Has the power of our dictionaries fallen into the hands of too few? Barrett says no.
It's always been that way. Think about all of the words that we use on a day-to-day basis, including the cliches and colloquialisms that we learned originally culturally from Shakespeare 100 years ago or 200 years ago. Shakespeare was your popularizer.
Barrett also says, we hold in our hands, or our mouths, the power to keep language democratic.
The vote that we do for the American Dialect Society is a smaller version of what we as English speakers do every day. When you choose a word to say or to write, you're actually casting a vote for it. You're saying, this word is important, it does what I want it to, and I think I should use it.
So forget politics this weekend. What word are you endorsing in 2008? For Weekend America, I'm Chrissy Clark.
Language expert Steven Pinker has a new book. It's called The Stuff of Thought. And find out more about the public radio show that Grant Barrett co-hosts. It's called Away with Words. There are links to both at our website, weekendamerica.org, along with the words that our listeners nominated for Word of the Year.
So much for another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. You can download a free podcast of the entire program at weekendamerica.org. So get out there and enjoy your weekend, or stay home and stay warm.
News and financial information brought to you by Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by
American Public Media.
What do you miss when you're away from home? For soldiers returning from Iraq, it can be the simplest thing that makes all the difference.
We appreciate things. You appreciate everything so much more. Everything. You know, orange juice. I drank like a gallon of orange juice the first day I was home just because I missed orange juice so much because we didn't have orange juice.
Army Specialist Andrea Gillingham's first weekend home on the next Weekend America. Join us.